Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Friday. It's August 30th, 57 degrees in Old Town. On the phone with us with a look at our trails, I have Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. What a beautiful morning. I was just hanging out over at the middle school where the bike school day was going on, you know, bagels and OJ and so forth. So if you're headed towards school, stop in and definitely say hi to the folks there. I think that's all put on by the Park City Transportation Department. Anyways, let's talk about the big news for trails this weekend. It's the point-to-point. You know, the point-to-point takes up about 80 miles worth of trails here locally. But if you follow it closely, you'll find that you can actually avoid the race if you choose to avoid the race. You can also see people coming and going in various spots, like the bottom of the Park City Mountain Restore the first time, if you want to be able to cheer people on, things like that. So to avoid the race for the most part, the race starts at 6 o'clock in Round Valley, goes up to Deer Valley, to the very top of Deer Valley, and then comes back down, descends into the resort, Park City Resort, and then goes back up and out. So if you kind of start on the more of the east and southeast side of town in the morning, you'll probably miss most of the racing. As long as you're not starting at 6, you should be good. And then just basically definitely avoid trying to travel south on the Mid-Mountain Corridor until the race is over with. This race takes quite a bit of time, and there'll be people out there for, I think the course is open for 12 hours. Also coming up, let's see, what else do we have coming up here this week? Not this weekend, but we are still looking for volunteers for the Tour de Stud, so if you get a moment and think about that one, it'd be great. And also, it is the deadline, Leslie. You know this is important to everybody. It's the deadline coming up here tonight at midnight to be guaranteed your socks for the Tour de Stud. So if you're looking to get your 35th anniversary socks, you need to register to be guaranteed that you will get socks. And that race will be going on September 15th, coming up here shortly. Outside of that, trail conditions are unbelievable. The weather is spectacular. The weekend looks to be just off the charts, kind of the weekends we like in Park City. Bugs are gone, so you got to love it. I'd say get out there and do whatever it is you like to do and have fun this weekend.
Okay, any comments you want to make with regard to yesterday's discussion at the council on e-bikes in Round Valley?
You know, I think, sure, I can comment a little bit. You know, the idea of a pilot program is great, and we do need to really probably try to test the waters. There was a lot of concern that, you know, doing it in Round Valley was not necessarily a good sampling of what e-bikes might mean to the community. So the fact that they tabled the discussion for the moment to reconsider how this might look, I think is probably a good way to move forward. And there's also, and I hope everybody gets a chance to participate in it, you know, really what surveys have shown is that there's a propensity by the community to not want to really have e-bikes out there on trails, which, whether that's correct or not, that survey was done 2 years ago. Now we're really looking at resurveying Park City residents and seeing how they really feel about it here in 2019. And if things are changing, then we want to be aware of that. So when you see that survey come out, please, please, please take the survey. It's really important. Everybody loves the trail system here, and we want to make sure everybody can continue to love it going forward as well. So, yeah, I think for the moment, the fact that it's tabled is okay.
Yeah. Do you think there's a better area, though, to test a pilot program than Round Valley, which is used by a lot of beginners?
Yes, but it's also, you know, beginners. Okay, so beginners for e-biking might still be a problem. On the other hand, that's one of the questions is, you know, if you take a lesser skilled rider or a casual rider and we start mixing with e-bike, e-mountain bikes that have lesser skilled riders on them, can they avoid the hiker, the biker? And whether it's in Round Valley or up on Mid-Mountain or whatever, you know, I think trying to get that good sampling is going to be difficult without having to have it be a fairly extensive program. And other areas, I did talk with Jefferson County and just outside of Boulder, Colorado. You know, they just did a pilot program and opened the trails for a set period of time to e-biking and then collected their samples and data and then made a decision from there.
Okay. All right, Charlie, we'll talk to you more, I'm sure, about it in the future. Thanks for your time this morning.
Oh, I think we're going to hear more about it. Yep.
Okay. It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with Stuyterville Basin Planning Commission Chair Melina Stevens. We'll have an update from Tuesday's meeting when the commission held a public hearing on the proposed neighborhood mixed-use or NMU zone. Park City Council member Nan Worrell will be in with a recap of last night's city council meeting, and outgoing Park City Mountain Chief Operating Officer Bill Rock will be in. He's accepted a new position with Vail Resorts as Vice President of the Mountain Division. We'll be talking about his tenure here in Park City during a tumultuous but exciting chapter in the resorts and Park City's history. Stay tuned. It's 8:14. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Stuyterville Basin Planning Commission met Tuesday, held a public hearing on the proposed NMU. That's the Neighborhood Mixed Use Zone. On the phone to tell us more, I have Planning Commission Chair Melina Stevens. Good morning to you, Melina.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, again, this was the most substantive and lively discussion with the public hearing there on the NMU zone. While this is being prompted by Henry Sigg's proposed project near the Home Depot, county staff is looking at several other regions for this zone. Is Sigg's proposal on hold until this zone is actually created or moved on with?
So with Mr. Sigg's project, he could go forward with the current process if that was his desire. From what I understand, that he would prefer to utilize this tool. And so he's submitted a plan that the county has actually been working on for several years in conjunction with county to be able to get this in place so that he can utilize this. It's just a better tool that offers additional flexibility as well as accountability for developers.
Yeah, and I guess in a nutshell, can you kind of give us this concept of what the neighborhood mixed-use zone is what you hope it will accomplish?
Absolutely. So the neighborhood mixed-use zone, we as county planning commission and staff have been working on it since about 2017 off and on, and it's been anticipated in the general plan since the last iteration of the general plan, where they identify several different areas within the general plan that if we were to develop some sort of mixed-use zone would be the most appropriate places. So this isn't a zone that anyone, anywhere within the basin, you know, someone living, you know, on Old Ranch Road could go and say, oh, wait, I really want to do a huge mixed-use neighborhood here. That wouldn't be allowed. It would have to be in one of the areas that is specified within the general plan. A neighborhood mixed-use zone, one of the benefits is that it allows for additional flexibility to put multiple different types of housing, commercial, office space. It allows for the more vibrant neighborhoods that we're seeing in some more urbanized areas that would be appropriate in places like Kimball Junction, where we're already seeing some mixed use. If there was some redevelopment to occur, that may be appropriate for a mixed use neighborhood where they could have some additional incentives for structured and underground parking or some more creative, affordable housing. It takes into account connectivity and transportation solutions and public spaces, which is something that we found was really important during some of our previous projects that we've worked on, that the community really values the public spaces, both parks, but just even gathering spaces. And so it speaks to that. So this is more comprehensive than perhaps the community commercial zone that we have right now, where a lot of these projects that we've seen are coming in under a community commercial zone, but there's a lot of things within that zone that wouldn't really be appropriate in perpetuity. For instance, in the community commercial zone, you could have a car dealership or a gas station or a lot of kind of more in industrial uses that wouldn't be appropriate. And so this kind of, I guess, also limits the usage so that it's things that would be appropriate in a neighborhood, coffee shops, those sorts of things.
Yeah, there were some interesting comments made by fellow commissioners in neighborhood mixed use. I mean, what's a neighborhood? And does it have to include residential? Did the commission decide on those questions?
You know, we're still working on it. It was really helpful. This was, I believe, the first public hearing we've had on this, or if not the first public hearing we've had in a little while. And it was helpful to get the comments from the community members. They brought up several things that led to some lively discussions with us, including, like you said, what is a neighborhood? Some commissioners felt strongly that there needed to be a certain percentage of housing, whereas others, you know, depending on where the mixed-use zone is currently located, maybe there already is substantive housing, again, like in the Kimball Junction area, where there's lots of housing currently, would that be as necessary? So that's something that we're still working through. Of course, we would welcome any comments at our next public hearing from community members that would have input concerning that specific topic. But that is something that we're still working through and trying to determine. We want to be careful to make sure that we're creating a zone that's going to lead to vibrancy and create some cool places, you know, that will be on brand and for the community and something that will be helpful for people, you know, in perpetuity.
Yeah. You did mention transportation. I mean, what about transit as an element here? I mean, do you want the zone to be close to transit corridors, or do they have to have the services on site so that people don't drive the 5 miles to Kimball Junction?
Yeah, and that's part of it, and that's part of the whole purpose of this zone is right now Kimball Junction is kind of the main place where people come and shop and eat and all of those things that are in town and Park City. There's several other neighborhoods and with some of the development that's occurring that may be appropriate for things like a grocery store or, you know, some light commercial, some additional housing where they could have additional people in maybe the Silver Creek neighborhoods or, even off of Old Ranch to have some other options that would be just as close as Kimball Junction so that when there's special events or other things occurring that we have some additional options for people when it comes to their fulfilling their needs. As far as transit is concerned, that is part of the neighborhood mixed-use zone is the connectivity, including transit. And with that, there's a couple of things that we're considering currently. Some of these neighborhoods don't currently have transit. As Pat Putt put it, it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation. You have to have a threshold of services in order to warrant transit, but some of these, some of these neighborhoods need transit in order to have the services. So we're looking at that in conjunction with, you know, the regional projections from both Park City and Summit County with their transportation plans. There, most of these areas, from what I understand, are projected to have transit at some point. So it would be working closely with transit and ensuring that would be something that either already is occurring that could be beefed up or something that we would in the future be able to get.
Yeah. Another panel member noted that in the Cory Village commercial spaces there are converting to office space. And so if we create a neighborhood mixed use zone, are we setting up a bunch of office parks?
Well, that's another thing that we've been discussing again this for several years, and that's something we have discussed a couple of times, is we want to make sure that, again, we're creating vibrant community spaces and not just big business parks. That's not going to serve the community in the way that the community needs at this point. So that's one thing that we're going to continue to discuss and try to determine how do we do that? You know, what kind of stipulations can we put in the zone to be able to, as far as we can, ensure that we're creating vibrant spaces and not just, you know, business parks that people will come to from 9 to 5.
All right. So some of the other general areas that are being looked at for an NMU would include Quinns Junction, Pinebrook, Jeremy, the Rasmussen Road corridor. Are those about it?
I don't have the map in front of me currently. Also, Kimball Junction, there's an area in Silver Creek, I'm not sure if you mentioned that, that kind of right on kind of the 4080 corridor. I believe that there's only five or six areas that are specifically mentioned in the general plan that would be appropriate.
All right. And as we mentioned, there was a public hearing. I think probably about 20 people or so showed up, several of them residents of Lower Silver Creek, a bit disgruntled, thinking that the county's out to rezone them and ramp up a bunch of development and apartments. Can you respond to their concerns?
So we really appreciated all of their input. With our public hearing, part of the benefit is that we're able to ensure that we're communicating effectively with the public. I think sometimes these processes get really confusing because with the neighborhood mixed-use zone and what we're doing currently, we're not rezoning anything. This just allows that this would then be a zone like rural residential, like community commercial, that someone could come in and request a rezone. So this is not rezoning anything in and of itself. Again, the only people that would be eligible to utilize this zone would be within those specified parcels. As far as the Silver Creek Village area is concerned, there's already some parcels that are zoned community commercial, and some of the projects, there was a few community members that were concerned about maybe a large apartment complex being built that wouldn't necessarily, in their opinion, fit with the neighborhood, would maybe be too intensive usage. Well, that's something that within a community commercial zone would already be an allowed use. So part of it is just kind of clarifying with the public that some of the things that they're maybe concerned with occurring could potentially already occur, just utilizing a zone that would be broader and would potentially allow for additional uses in the future, as well as not the same stipulations as far as transit, community spaces, connectivity, you know, the vibrancy that comes with multiple uses. So that's really what we're working towards. We're not trying to come in and change the face of neighborhoods. I mean, we do not proactively go out and, you know, try to make these changes. We're really more reactive when we get applications from developers or individuals that want to build projects. Then we respond at that point with ensuring that the project meets the code and is appropriate. But we just want to make sure that the community knows that this is an ongoing process and that we'll continue to take their input and hope that additional people will come and input in our next public hearing. We'll be discussing this project in both of the meetings in September. We'll have a work session, our first meeting, where the public is welcome to come and listen. We won't be taking public comment at that point, but the second meeting in September, we will have another public hearing regarding the neighborhood mixed-use zone. So we encourage any community members that are interested or concerned to please come in and voice their opinion and facts and concerns.
Okay. Another topic real quickly was the affordable apartments in Silver Creek Village. What did the Planning Commission decide on that?
So we've been working on that project for quite a while. The Silver Creek Village project in this last meeting were relatively minimal changes that just needed to be made so that they could move forward with the project. There wasn't really anything substantive that we reviewed. They were just minimal changes, more technical things that needed to be voted on and corrected prior to them being able to move forward with the project.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just that we appreciate all the public that came to the meeting and all of their contributions. It really is a more vibrant and helpful process when the public is involved. And thanks again to staff and all of their hard work.
Okay. Melina Stevens is the chair of the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:27. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:28 now, and good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Council discussed social equity, e-bikes, and more at last night's City Council meeting. Council member Nan Worrell joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. The Park City Community Foundation presented the Community Social Equity Strategic Plan during work session with council. It's been ongoing for about a year now. Anything there surprise you?
Well, I've been part of the advisory committee, so I've kind of been able to watch it from the front row as it's been being developed, and I've saw the draft. But this was the first time the council had seen it all together, and we had several people in the audience that had worked on some of the task forces there, and we also had many of the nonprofits that are going to be involved in implementing that plan. So it was really an exciting time for us to see the deliverable that we had asked for when we first partnered with the community foundation.
Okay. Anybody surprised, though, in council who hadn't been kind of following along?
No, I don't think so.
All right. A few council comments, including your own, centered around words and the way we communicate about social equity. You took issue with the phrase NIMBY, not in my backyard, which usually refers to people who don't want affordable housing in their neighborhoods, and thought it would be better to put a positive spin. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We got an excellent email from a member of the community that had taken the time to read the draft strategic plan and said, why are we, shaming people? Why are we not having a positive conversation around housing? So let's stop putting labels on people. Let's stop name calling and instead have a conversation about, exactly what is affordable housing, who lives in the affordable housing.
Okay, so how are we going to go about doing that as part of this?
Well, Diego responded, and we should have YIMBY, yes, in my backyard, as part of the conversation. And so that's part of the strategic plan is communication and moving forward in implementation of it will be a lot of community conversations.
Yeah, that's real, though. I mean, it's like...
It is very real.
Right?
Sure.
So it's not like we can just put a positive spin on it, pretend it's, all well and good. I mean, how is it that we continue to address the concerns about building something in somebody's backyard that they wouldn't have expected?
I think that the conversation, it's all about the conversation and what the project actually is. I think when you talk to people, most of them will say, yes, I'm really supportive of affordable housing, until they figure out it's going to be near them. And so I think looking at some of the affordable projects that we have in town, they're beautiful. And people walking by wouldn't realize that they were affordable housing.
You and Councilmember Steve Joyce are on the committee that decides which nonprofits are awarded social service contracts with the city. And this round of contracts focuses on social equity. So with that presentation in mind, I mean, what are you going to be looking for in proposals?
I can tell you after we meet at 10 o'clock this morning, we really wanted to wait until we had the strategic plan in hand and the council had a chance to talk about it. And now we will look at, from that strategic plan, we'll be meeting with the Community Foundation as well to find out what's some low-hanging fruit that we might be able to go out with RFP now and award some special service contracts.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we know the council cares about social equity, naming it as a critical priority. As we've received more details on the need in the community, what is the city's role in social equity, and where is it going to have the most impact?
The council was really clear when we first made this a critical priority that this was not something that we wanted to own as a city. It has to be owned throughout the community. And I think the Community Foundation, in the preparation of the strategic plan, has done a really good job of engaging different sectors of the community that may not have been involved before. So they have engaged over 100 people on their task forces and on the advisory committee that put input into this, that have bought into the concept. They have some nonprofits that are going to take the lead on some of the top three. For example, one of the top three areas identified was housing. So Mountain Lands is going to lead the task force on that as they look at ways that they can advocate for more housing, and they've identified some goals with that. And PC TOTS is going to house a coordinator for the early childhood education coordinator. And that person will be pulling together efforts community-wide to figure out how do we provide more affordable child care so that we can have folks in our workforce actually able to make it to work because they know that their child's in a safe and learning place.
And then what's the third one?
Third one is inclusion. And that one's a little squishier. And so the Community Foundation has come up with the concept of a cohort that will spend about 18 months, I believe, to 2 years, learning about how do you have conversations about inclusion. And then that cohort will be able to go out and train other people or implement things within their own workplaces.
Right. So is that what this last year has been spent? I mean, people, that's what Diego has heard from people, that they don't feel included?
Absolutely. And that was not surprising, I don't think, to the council. I think the extent to which people weren't feeling included was a bit surprising.
Yeah, and not included in what? I mean, right? I mean, because we all know it's like, show up, right? I mean, that's the first step.
Yeah. They don't necessarily feel welcome in all parts of the town. We have, Carol Loomis mentioned yesterday during the meeting that she has some teachers at PC Tots that grew up here in Park City, and they've never been to Main Street because they don't necessarily feel welcome there, and they don't feel like it has anything to offer them. And I thought that was a really interesting comment.
Right. I mean, you're going to spend a lot of money on clothes or
food or
but yeah.
There's events on Main Street that are free. And when you think about who is attending our parades, who's you know, attending different special events on Main Street, our minority population oftentimes isn't represented there.
All right. Everyone's welcome, though. I mean,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And I mean,
so how do you make them feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many more PSAs we could do about Miner's Day.
Right. Yeah.
That would make somebody feel welcome. I mean, I know. I don't know. I guess maybe we do a group, you know, somehow just arrange neighborhood groups. I mean, is that what we're talking about?
I think that's a good suggestion. I think what has come out of this effort with the strategic plan is that those are really hard conversations to have, and nobody's quite ready to know how to do those. What's the best way to have those conversations? And so I think this learning cohort that the Community Foundation is proposing is a way to help people learn how to have those conversations.
All right. Alyssa, you spent a lot of time trying to decide if a park on Upper Main Street is actually a park. Can you just kind of give us the background here? What's the issue?
There is a strip of land that runs behind some homes along the west bank of the ephemeral stream that runs along behind Main Street. And there is a park on one side of that stream, on the west side of that stream, that has a gazebo and some picnic area and that. And then on the other side of the stream, it was originally said that it was a park, but when you look at it, it looks like somebody's backyard. And the way that the ADA ramp runs down there, the railing blocks you from actually getting onto that lawn. And so if you crawled through the railing, I guess, or went around and went through the trees, you could get into this. But again, it looks like somebody's backyard. So the city planted grass there, I guess in the 90s or early 2000s, and it's gorgeous and it's irrigated, and so we're trying to clean up lot lines. We're trying to allow some of those homes that back up to that stream to purchase part of that land so that they can, you know, extend their deck or something like that out there. So the question was, is that parcel really considered a park? What was the original intent of that? You know, when it was designated that, was it for to kind of flow into the park across the stream, which it doesn't? Or, you know, what was the real deal? So we spent a lot of time talking about that.
So are we talking about then just giving up the city ownership and selling it then to the property owners? Is that the idea?
Correct.
So doing away with the park altogether?
Well, and that one little parcel behind 148 Main was the address.
Okay, so there still would be some public access, though.
To the main park where the gazebo is and all the picnic tables, and there's a nice way to cross the stream there.
Okay. More than a dozen people speaking during public comment on the city's e-bike ordinance discussion and the possible pilot program allowing e-bikes in Round Valley. The council did vote not to move forward with temporarily amending the ordinance at this time. How did you feel about that? You agreed with that?
Yeah, I think it's premature. We first had this conversation 2 weeks ago where they introduced the concept of allowing e-bikes on our trails, e-mountain bikes on our trails. And we just didn't feel like we had enough information. You know, we had several people speak for it. We had several people speak against it. We had several people say this Round Valley wasn't the appropriate place to have it. And so what we'd like to do and what we've decided to do is form a task force, very similar to what we did when we were trying to figure out if we could have off-leash dogs in a certain place. And that task force would consist of community members. It would, we think, one public comment talked about the importance of including the hospital in it because of all the injuries that come in. So they have a different perspective, including the resorts, you know, where the a lot of the trails are that people want to use their e-bikes on. And so we're going to form the task force, and we're going to do a survey of people that are out on our trails, whether they're on mountain bikes or whether they're hiking or whatever they're doing out there, to get great a cross-section of input on are there some trails that aren't appropriate for e-mountain bikes, you know, is a single track appropriate? Is a double track appropriate? So we just think it's too soon to make policy. I think all agree that at some point in time it's going to happen, but we want to make sure we do it right.
Right. I mean, and that's what we know. Reality is that only more e-bikes are going to show up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want to make it safe for everybody. We want to make, you know, it as a pleasant experience as possible. You know, we talked a lot about education. You know, there's already some issues with trail etiquette right now. And, you know, so as if this program or pilot is put into place, we want to make sure that it has an educational component too.
And I think kind of out there in the background is that the state legislature could decide to override all local ordinances on e-bikes, and then it would be a free-for-all?
Yeah, that's what we want to be proactive here. We want to make sure that we get something in place. And so the legislature doesn't move towards that. We're saying we're regulating our trails. We've got the, you know, we're working on the e-bike ordinance. And, you know, so we want to be able to say that when we start the legislative session.
Yeah, so we've got a couple more months of bike riding. Mm-hmm. Is something going to happen, though, this year?
It depends on how fast the task force gets together and how fast they work. You know, we want to look at other areas. One of the public comment last night regarded standards. You know, many states have standards in terms of how wide the trail needs to be and that in order to put an e-bike on it.
Okay. Nan, anything else you want to mention?
I just want to make sure that everyone knows that Miner's Day is coming up Monday, and there's all sorts of activities, starting with a 5K run in the morning, and then all sorts of activities in the park, as well as the parade and the running of the balls. I wouldn't be a good Rotarian if I didn't talk about running of the balls.
Okay, and you'll be at Silly Sunday to sell those balls.
No. Yes.
Right.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah. Well, to sell them. I guess.
The
yeah.
balls.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is it? One ball is
$5.
$5, mm-hmm. Or you could buy a few more?
Oh, we'd love you to buy as many balls as you'd like.
Yeah. You get a deal if you buy a few, though?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what's the prize?
Oh, gosh. There's all sorts of prizes. And so last year, a friend of mine won a pair of skis. Somebody won a really cool parka. So they're good prizes.
Okay. Nan, thanks.
Thank you.
It's Park City Council Member Nan Worrell. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:42. And just a heads up from Summit County, overnight lightning caused an estimated 80 acres to burn in Summit County. The fire originally reported to be burning near Tollgate is actually burning about 5 miles northeast of Colville. That's near the Interstate 80 I-84 interchange. It's being called the Echo 80 fire. Rains did help to extinguish the flame a couple of hours after the fire started, but the containment level at this point is zero. Some 60 firefighters scheduled to battle the fire from land and air. 4 engines, a water tender, and helicopter expected to assist along with a hand crew. The county's bulldozer also on the scene. The good news is that no homes or structures are threatened at this point. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Well, it was 2015. It was the end of an era when Powder Core sold the assets of Park City Mountain Resort to Vail Resorts, allowing Park City to be combined with the Canyons Resort to create the largest resort in the country. One of the men behind that transition was the new guy on the block, Bill Rock. As we've reported, he's been named as the new vice president of Vail Resorts Mountain Division, and he and his family making the move to company headquarters in Broomfield, Colorado. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, and congratulations on the promotion.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. Good morning.
Yeah, some of us just going to say, wouldn't consider that a promotion. I mean, it would be like getting a great job in Salt Lake, more responsibility, more money. Now we have to deal with the commute, and now we don't get to walk out our door and go skiing. So,
yeah, well, I look at it a little bit differently. So I'll be responsible for all five of our Colorado resorts and also Park City. So I'll get a chance to visit Park City, and I'll be able to spend 80, 90 days in the mountains just like I do now. So, yeah, I think it's the best of both worlds.
All right. So has that transition happened?
Not quite. A couple of weeks, we'll make the official transition, and our family is getting ready to move. And probably by the end of the month, we'll make the move, end of September.
Okay. So how far is Broomfield from the closest ski area?
You know, it's pretty close to Keystone. You just got to go up I-70 to get to Keystone. And I'd say about an hour from where we'll be living. And you know, I'll be up there a lot of midweeks, a lot of holidays, just like everybody else, just checking things out and also here. So looking forward to it.
All right. So you think you will get as many days on the skis, huh?
That's the plan. I think, you know, part of my job is to go out and see what's happening and coach the team and build a team. And so you can't really do that unless you see it yourself. And just like I did here in Park City, you know, being out and about and seeing what's going on really matters. And so, yeah, that's a big part of my role.
Okay. So coming then to take over where you leave off is Mike Gore, who's very familiar, but he was only on the canyon side of things. So when does he make that transition?
Yeah, so officially Mike and I will transition on September 9th. And Mike, you know, as you know, has a deep history in skiing, over 40 years of experience, a deep history in Utah. And so it's kind of funny, people who were kind of like, well, we're sorry to see you go. And then I tell them Mike's coming. They were like, oh, great. Awesome. We have Mike. So, you know, people are happy to have Mike come back. And so am I. He's just a talented leader and the team is not going to skip a beat.
Yeah. So when you accepted the job back in 2015 to come to Park City, did you know what you were in for?
You know, yes and no, I'd say. I've been in the ski industry my whole career and always followed Park City and had great admiration for things that happened here. And anytime you're in mountain towns with ski areas, a big economic driver, you know, there's always challenges and opportunities, but it's something I thrive on and I love, and I really love my time here in Park City. It's just been fantastic. And as you mentioned in the opening, we've just got to do some incredible things with connecting the two resorts and building one team. And I couldn't be prouder of the team that we've worked with while I've been here. And it's been a real highlight of my career.
Yeah. You also, well, let's just kind of talk about some of the challenges. Because, I mean, you were handed many challenges. I mean, right? I mean, it was like first it was the whole trademark issue, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were involved in that. And I think, again, like any small town, you have times when maybe you're out of alignment with what people want and what you want. And so, you know, we try to navigate through those things with integrity as best you can. And at the end, it worked out in a great way. And ultimately, the right answer usually does come out. And so, yeah, it's part of the job in towns like this. And, you know, I hope people would say that, you know, I handled it with professionalism and integrity, and we got to the right place most of the time.
Yeah, and I think another big part of that early on was, like you mentioned, you know, just kind of making it one team, right? I mean, because again, we had we want the good old days, and then
yeah,
we had the people very excited, you know, about the Epic Pass opportunity.
Yeah, I think making one resort was an opportunity of a lifetime for us, for me, for our whole team. And I think when people embrace that idea, it really lit a fire for everyone in terms of what we could actually accomplish. And I think, you know, we've just been so successful, and I think our team takes a lot of pride in that. And for me, that's the thing that I'll just remember from my time here in Park City more than anything professionally was that project.
The kid in the candy store with your $50 million?
Yeah, spending $50 million in one summer is harder than it looks. And yeah, it's not many people get an opportunity to do that. And
yeah,
our team just executed that as well as possible.
Yeah, so we saw, of course, the gondola, which linked them. We saw the new miners' camp. We saw a lot of...
Yeah, that summer we did the link, the Quicksilver Gondola link. We did two lifts. We did Miner's Camp Restaurant. We renovated Red Pine and Summit House. And we did over 16 miles of snowmaking pipe just in that one summer. And, you know, since then we've added lifts. We did the High Meadow Project. We've done Mid-Mountain Lodge renovation, other snowmaking. And then this summer we've got the Over and Out lift, which I showed you the other day, and Tombstone Grill, which is a brand new restaurant at the bottom of Tombstone. And you know, I don't know for sure, but I think we'd be hard pressed to find a ski area in that time span that's had that level of improvement in the country or maybe anywhere. It's just quite a fun 5 years.
Yeah. So with the new job, is that kind of what you'll do? You'll be going to each of these five resorts and kind of seeing what improvements need to be made and then making those recommendations? Or
yeah, certainly with the teams on the ground, my role is a lot more strategic than day to day, and which will be fun, you know, to be a little more forward looking, helping those teams, you know, perform at the highest levels, deliver for our guests. And yeah, looking to see how we can invest in those areas to make sure they're continuing to grow and provide the experience of a lifetime for our guests. So yeah, that's kind of what my role will be. And helping direct the whole company. I'm also on the executive committee, which I have been now for over a year. And that just helps, you know, that group runs the whole company. And so that'll be a big part of my role as well.
Yeah. And looking back too, I mean, you came and we had some really incredibly challenging snow years. Good thing you got to end it all on a great year, huh?
Yeah, you know, Utah snow is fantastic, and it's all that it's advertised to be when it comes. And you know, even in the leaner years, our team has just proven to the investments in snowmaking technology and the talent of the team as they operate the equipment that we have just made pretty good skiing, even though we've had some lean years. So all in all, it's been great.
Yeah, so any advice to Mike when he returns to run the resort? I mean, I know you've kind of figured out the parking lot challenges. Employees, I'm guessing, is a big challenge.
Yeah, and I think nothing here is going to be a curveball for Mike. You know, he's seen it all, and I think it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition. When I first got here, I was leaning on Mike a lot for advice. So I leaned on Mike, and now Mike's coming in, you know, to replace me. And I think he's gonna develop insights very quickly and just do a fantastic job.
Yeah, have people figured out the alternating lift lines? I know that was always.
You know what? I think they have. I think it's pretty good. You know, left, right. Be courteous to each other. You know, I think it's not that hard actually.
Yeah, and then night skiing. I remember this game brought up at the leadership conference talk with CEO Rob Katz, and it was like, oh, talk to Bill. So we didn't institute it this year. Is there some talk about maybe a couple nights a week? Again, I mean, we had talked about letting kids put down their screens and having some family ski time together.
You know, it's always an option. We'll continue to look at what the opportunities are. I think the night skiing right now is reserved for kids who are training and racing, and also the masters racers. It's mostly a training facility at night now. And you know, we do have the lights, and if the business opportunity is there, there's a way to make that happen. I think, you know, Mike and I and the team will look at that. And right now we're not planning on doing night skiing for this winter and for the general public other than the training. And but again, we'd always evaluate that and see if that opportunity made sense.
Okay. Anything else, Bill, you want to tell our listeners?
You know, I would be remiss in my appearance here if I didn't say the Epic Pass is on sale and the deadline's coming up. So epicpass.com. There's a new product out right now. It's really going to revolutionize skiing, just like the Epic Pass did. It's epic for everyone. And so you can get pass-like discounts buying single-day tickets, good any day in the year at any of our resorts. So if you go to epicpass.com, you can find the pass for you. So
okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Well, we always appreciate you coming on and talking to us, Bill.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. Appreciate it. Thank you.
It's Bill Rock, the outgoing CEO. Again, he's accepted a job at the company headquarters in Broomfield, Colorado, as the vice president of the Mountain Division. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:58 now. Good morning. Well, vehicle burglaries and several property thefts have been reported in the past week in Summit County. Five vehicles were burglarized in Park Meadows on Saturday. Several property thefts occurred in the basin on Wednesday. Park City Police Captain Phil Kirk tells KPCW you can't really call the five auto burglaries break-ins because none of the vehicles on Holiday Ranch Loop and Little Kate Roads were locked. A variety of items were missing from some of the vehicles. Kirk says Park City can get a rash of burglaries that are usually committed by people who are supporting a drug addiction. They'll pawn the items stolen from cars parked overnight in driveways or on the street. People make it easy for criminals when they leave valuables in their vehicles. A woman parked her vehicle on Wednesday morning at the Silver Summit Trailhead for just about 45 minutes. When she returned, she had found her front passenger window shattered and her purse and laptop missing. The sheriff report shows that the suspect used the credit card at several places in Salt Lake City. Deputies spoke with the managers at the stores where the card was used and were able to determine that the suspect is a white male wearing baggy shorts and a t-shirt and hat. He was driving a white four-door sedan. The case is still under investigation. Pictures of the suspect vehicle will be posted at kpcw.org once they're received. Summit County reported a garage theft on Aspen Drive in Summit Park on Wednesday, where three bikes were stolen. The owner estimates the value is more than $22,000. They're not certain if the garage door was left open. And another theft in Summit Park neighborhood involved a house under construction. Tools valued at $1,900 were taken Wednesday night. The sheriff log indicates the tools and the construction site were left unsecured. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for the Morning Mix right after headline news from NPR. I'll be back on Monday, but hope you enjoy your long holiday weekend. This is KPCW Park City.